Yeah, 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 come and take a look at the snow. Bright white as far as your eyesight goes. Come and take a look at the fields of snow. I'll just get my coat, then we're good to go. Come and take a look at the lake. Let's have a quick skate before it gets late. Come and take a look at the frozen lake. Put your clothes on, mate, don't make that mistake. Happy Christmas.
Greetings, holiday shoppers. It's 200 shopping days left until Christmas. My name is Joe. I'll be your host this evening for another fantastic, lovely, wonderful episode of Christmas Creeps. This is a holiday podcast where we talk about holiday movies. This week is a special week because, A, it's our 10th episode, and that's amazing because I did not believe we would ever get this far. Second, Karen is laughing her ass off mic.
I'm trying so hard.
Third... It is Johnny Five's birthday.
This is like take three or four.
We've been trying to do this for a while, and
we may or may not have had a failed like half episode before this.
Brad, say hi to the people on the.
Hey.
So before we go any further tonight, I want to start. I know a lot of podcasts do this. I want to do this one just tonight because I don't want to make this a tradition. With the question of the week, or a question to lead us off tonight. The question is, how many drinks have you had?
I think it's like seven.
Seven what?
Rum.
Okay.
Seven rum?
Yeah.
Like seven bottles of rum?
I ran out of Sailor Jerry and I had to resort to Captain Morgan. I want to kill myself.
Oh, boy.
Well, is this
a round table?
As you move up in the...
Yeah, look at the table. Of course it's round.
Yeah, this actually is a round table. As you move up in the hierarchy on the ship, the worse the rum gets, is what I heard.
The higher the rank, the ranker the rum.
Sailor Jerry, one of the better ones, apparently.
Yeah, and apparently the Kraken is the best, but we haven't had that.
They don't allow the Kraken on the boat.
So Karen, how many have you had? Friends here.
Same as John, but he fixed the last couple, and I asked him to fix them a little bit weaker, but I don't know that he actually did.
Okay, so you're keeping pace with John.
I put some stuff in the cup that wasn't rum. I put ice in there.
We've had about six or seven drinks each.
Mind you, when we started counting, it was 8 p.m.
I'm like 9 sheets and to the wind right now.
Yeah, it's exactly midnight. As we record this. Bradford, how many drinks have you had?
I am a 1.5 tall boys in and 2 white Russians without ice, but I'm a lightweight.
Yeah, so...
That's true. Brad is the skinniest of us all.
I also got here later, so
yeah,
I'm
Brad didn't leave last week. He's just been a high gun at the table for 2 weeks.
Oh, yeah, he's been kind of camping around,
hogging it, and coming up.
That sounds like something nasty.
Yes, it does.
If he sees a shadow, time. There's 6 more weeks of Christmas Creeps.
I am currently in the middle of my 5th tall boy, and I have not had much to eat besides a little birthday cake for John and some chips. So
there's some dip with the chips.
Some dip. But the point is, this is a party tonight because episode 10 and Johnny Five's birthday.
Yeah,
see a picture of the birthday cake if you look on our Facebook.
Go to our Facebook page. Facebook.com/Xmas Creeps.
No, it's Christmas Creeps.
Facebook.com/Christmas Creeps.
Just search Christmas
and
Creeps.
You can probably see I got to pick the movie and
birthday boy's choice. That's how we do it.
Yeah.
Karen, I'm sorry we didn't let you pick when it was your birthday.
Yeah, we watched fucking reindeer games on my birthday.
Whatever, it's close
what
enough.
A bum ride.
I know, right?
That's kind of appropriate given tonight's episode.
Yeah,
it really is.
You know, I was like, you know, I told people on Twitter, we're watching a movie. You might have seen this particular film star in comedy movies. Now we're taking a turn in action. So you might have seen Ghostbusters 2. Sigourney Weaver is taking a turn in Alien.
Right!
I think you may be misremembering the timeline here.
Uh-huh. I think maybe you're drunker than you thought you were.
But,
Oh, we watched Die Hard, yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
That's the title. Okay. We watched Die Hard.
Which did not have Sigourney Weaver in it at all.
You know what Die Hard was missing?
Sigweave.
No, Kurt Fuller. It had fucking Prince Will Vernon from Breakfast Club. It had Walter goddamn Peck in it.
True.
It didn't have fucking...
It had Viggo the fucking Carpathian. Viggo,
it didn't have Kurt Fuller from Ghostbusters 2. What the hell? So, here's my theory. So, you know how in Star Trek, the reboot, Spock went back in time, and he started feeding, like, the other Spock information?
Yes.
Started spoon-feeding the other
Brad,
Spock.
Don't laugh. This is an actual movie he's talking about.
So, I think that maybe... All right, have you played Hitman? Any of the Hitman games?
No.
Okay, so in Hitman, the story is, you know Hitman, right? The bald white guy with the
sure.
barcode on the head?
Yeah, with the red tie.
Like Donkey Kong.
Yes!
He's like Donkey Kong, except he's a human in a suit and he murders people.
Yeah, they made a movie about him and a diehard villain played him.
The Hitman's backstory is like five of like the world's worst like drug lord terrorist type people
yeah.
got together and combined their DNA to make the ultimate like generic assassin. Even though he's a, like a white ass cracker dude, like story wise, he's supposed to be like a generic everyman. Like he could literally pass for any nationality
okay.
and blend in.
All right.
What if instead of five like drug lord terrorist dudes from all around the world, it was Dick Cheney and Karl Rove? It would be Kurt Fuller.
Isn't that the same thing?
Wait a minute. Hang on. Let's bring this full circle.
Fuller circle?
Yes. Kurt Fuller played Karl Rove on That's My Bush.
Really?
Of course he did.
Yes, he did.
Well, how could he not?
Oh, God. This is sad, but the thing that I am most familiar with Kurt Fuller in...
Supernatural.
Yes, yeah, Supernatural.
What does this have to do with Die Hard? I'm
Kurt
sorry.
Kurt Fuller should have been in Die Hard.
Okay.
He played a fucking angel who was an asshole.
Every other asshole in an 80s movie was in Die Hard. Kurt Fuller wasn't. He was in Ghostbusters 2.
He was in Wayne's World.
He was in Wayne's World, yeah.
Kurt Fuller was in Ghostbusters 2 because William Atherton was too busy being in Die Hard.
Yes.
The Atherton.
William Atherton, a.k.a. Walter Peck, a.k.a. Dickless, a.k.a. Wally Wick.
A.k.a. whatever the fuck his character's name was in this movie.
Thornburg.
Johnson.
He was no, he's Thornburg.
Oh, okay.
Thornburg, the reporter.
I thought he was one of the Johnsons. Okay, I'm sorry.
So yes, before we get any further, we watched Die Hard.
It's a fucking great movie, man.
It was amazing.
It was awesome.
Karen and Brad hadn't seen Die Hard. What
completely.
The fuck?
Completely.
Fuck is wrong with you
half
two?
Half of this podcast came to Die Hard absolutely fresh and new.
Yes,
and they made it fun. They made it so much fun for the two of us who have seen it a million times.
Yeah, let me just say, half of this podcast is dead to me.
Whatever, we've seen it now. And absolutely...
I was not dead to you, I know that.
It's because you moved away. Absolutely, unironically, it was an amazing movie. I loved it so much.
Yes, it was... I knew it was good from everything that I'd heard from people, but mm-hmm. it was... better than what I had heard.
It's definitely one of those movies where people tend to overhype it, especially around Christmas.
Yeah.
Like, the reason we watch it is absolutely 100% a Christmas movie.
Okay.
And these days, people tend to sort of over-emphasize that to the point where, like, oh yeah, we'll have Die Hard marathons on Spike TV or, you know, for example... My mom fucking hates Die Hard for this very reason.
Really?
My dad and I love to watch it at
Aww.
Christmas, and she's just like,
well,
you know what? I'm going into the next room. I'll see you later.
I went into it knowing that it's been so hyped from people that I kind of expected it'd be like, oh, this is probably pretty good,
yeah,
but
pretty
it won't
much.
Be like that great. But I loved it.
It was like Paris.
It was so good.
It was like going, I was like, everybody loves Paris. It's a city of lights and love. And I'm like, yeah,
yes.
I'm sure it's nice. I'm sure it's overrated and overpriced. And I was like, no.
I was
awesome.
I was so afraid
the same way with Die Hard.
That I was gonna piss Joe and John off because I was just like squealing with glee like every time like something ridiculous would happen
so
in this movie.
That made me realize that like John and I aren't crazy, you know?
Something I have to point
I was
out,
smiling like a fiend last night.
Oh my god,
something I have
yes.
to point out is whenever you think about a cliche in an action movie or something like that, Die Hard did that. Die Hard was the fucking source of that cliche. Mm-hmm. Like, there's actually, like, a trope or, like, a Hollywood term, like, the elevator pitch, Die Hard on a blank. Under Siege is Die Hard on a boat. Under Siege 2 is Die Hard on a train. Speed is Die Hard on a bus. Snakes on a Plane is Die Hard on a Snakes on a Plane.
Mallrats 2, when it comes out, is going to be Die Hard in a mall.
White House Down.
Die Hard in a White House.
Which, just as a side note, I love White House Down. I thought...
Thank you, Roland Emmerich.
White House Down is the best 2013... Die Hard in a White House movie.
Yes.
And I hate that I have to say that because there are actually two of them.
I mean, it was
dog shit.
It was a dumb action movie, but I really liked it when we watched it.
The difference is Olympus Has Fallen tries so super hard to be Die Hard.
Yeah.
That it takes itself so seriously.
Well,
but then White House Down.
It's a Roland Emmerich movie.
White House Down is a big, goofy, stupid Die Hard movie that
exactly.
happens to have the president in it.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
So we could probably just do this whole podcast about White House Down.
Can we? I haven't seen it in like a year and a half.
I have not seen White House Down.
Oh, Brad.
Let's do a podcast about Die Hard.
Oh, Brad.
Die Hard
I'm thinking of Rocky Horror Picture Show right now. I'm sorry.
Oh, there is a story that seriously someone pitched. I don't know what movie it was. Someone pitched it as Die Hard in an office building.
Are you shitting me?
Die Hard.
Die Hard?
Yeah, that was the rumor I heard, that eventually it turned around full circle until someone pitched a movie as Die Hard in an office building.
So they mean Die Hard, right?
So Die Hard.
Yes.
Okay, so this is episode one of Hardcast. Welcome to the party. Welcome to the party, pals.
Welcome to Hardcore.
We're all hard as fuck over Die Hard.
Welcome to Hardcast, where we talk about Hardcastle and McCormick.
Yeah, Hardcastle and McCormick. Thank you.
Okay, so but yeah, isn't it kind of weird how no Die Hard movie is started out being a Die Hard movie?
It is, and that's sort of the most amazing thing about Die Hard, and there are many amazing things about Die Hard, is that the road this movie took to becoming Die Hard, because it didn't just start out as like a screenplay named Die Hard. It started out as a
sequel.
Well, John, you explain it.
It was a sequel to a Frank Sinatra movie. Frank Sinatra was in a movie called The Detective, which was based off a book by
Roderick Thorpe.
Roderick Thorpe, yeah. And Frank Sinatra had like a pair of play where he had first refusal to be in the sequel, which is called Nothing Lasts Forever.
And mind you, the Detective came out in the 60s.
Yeah.
So by the time they got around to making the sequel,
Sinatra was like 150.
Oh yeah, he was just a bag of bones, basically. So he naturally turned it down. So they had to go. Fox had to go find somebody else to be in
this
movie.
They went through like Schwarzenegger, fucking Reynolds.
At a certain time, they were going to make this the sequel to Commando.
Yeah,
which is equally as insane as a Frank Sinatra Die Hard movie.
Also, remember they actually name dropped Schwarzenegger in this movie.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah, and we'll get back around to that in a minute. But yeah, they brought it to Schwarzenegger. He said no. They brought it to Burt Reynolds. He said no. Clint Eastwood said no, which actually would have been kind of appropriate if they had made the final movie.
With the whole cowboy motif, yeah.
Exactly, yeah.
Could this have been a Dirty Harry 6?
Probably would have been, I think, Dirty Harry 4. Because, like, came out, I think, in the 90s.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
So the point being, Fox basically was scrambling around trying to find some guy to be in their action movie. And at a certain point, they said, well, how about just the guy from Moonlighting.
Yeah. That's what I was actually mentioning on Twitter. Before this, Bruce Willis was in Moonlighting, and that was it.
Yeah.
And as we were watching this and discussing it, I guess, it came out that I had never really seen Bruce Willis in any movies besides The Sixth Sense.
And Brad hadn't seen,
except Fifth Element.
Anything except for Fifth Element.
So this was a real treat for me, because this is just like youngin' Bruce Willis, you know?
You get to see Bruce Willis with most of his hair.
Exactly. He wasn't bald yet.
It's refreshing to somebody like me.
And a really strange accent.
A little. He kind of plays up the New York accent.
Yeah, it was kind of affected, but I really liked it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so
that's because he's clearly acting, but he's doing a good job at
right.
it.
Right.
Which, that's what I have to say. Bruce Willis in like later Die Hard is just a crotchety old man.
He's just kind of brute. He's action movie star, billionaire, probably Bruce Willis.
That's too bad. I want to come on down to the coast and have some laughs.
But so let's say Die Hard 2, which took place at an airport in Washington, D.C., started out as just a random-ass script called 120 Minutes, you know? Die Hard 3 in New York, that started out as a script called Simon Says, which was originally going to be turned into Lethal Weapon 4, and they're like, let's make it Die Hard 3 instead.
Die Hard 4 was based on a Wired magazine article called A Farewell to Arms, which is all about a cyber terrorist attack taking place on the United States based on a method known as a fire sale, which depicting a three-stage coordinated attack on a country's transportation, telecommunications, financial, and utilities infrastructure systems. That's five prongs, but whatever.
But when did this come out? When was this Die Hard, published?
The article, it doesn't say when the article came out, but the movie came out in 2007.
Oh, wow.
Die Hard 4.
That was pretty good.
That's way later than I would have thought that they would have been, like, speculating about cyber terrorism.
Yeah.
I would have thought it would have been, like, pre-Y2K.
Apparently the article was prompted by 9/11, so, I mean,
I still would, and then I don't know.
Die Hard 5 was written as a Die Hard movie, but that's why we don't talk about Die Hard 5.
Yeah, Die Hard 5 is the only one where they tried really hard to make a Die Hard movie. And
Brad and I still have to make it through the Die Hard catalog, so
yes,
we
have to make it
someday.
Can I speak about cyber terrorism for a moment?
Just a moment.
That didn't flesh out really well, did it? Other than like the hack that they recently did on OPM, I mean, like, they steal your credentials or whatever, some shit, but they never really like ended up hacking planes or power plants or anything that we've been
planes
promised.
Or trains or automobiles.
The other day I actually happened upon a site that ISIS hacked, but it just said it had like a picture of a dude in a, you know, a head. His face was covered, and he was like, "It's like this site has been hacked by ISIS." And I'm like, "Okay." And then I hit the back button. I was like, "Well, that was a minor inconvenience."
Yeah, it's like
keep the same site up and then insert some malicious code into my computer.
That was an inconvenient truth.
Yeah, thanks cyber terrorism. I shopped at Target, so I have to get a new credit card from my bank automatically.
Did they not see War Games?
Apparently not.
Because
nobody saw War Games. What the fuck are you talking about?
I haven't seen any movies, and I've seen fucking War Games.
Game, set, match, John.
Oh.
You've got nothing.
So, Die Hard stars Bruce Willis as John McClane,
yes,
a New York cop. And we start with him on a plane. He has a gun on the plane. That's a fucking... He has a gun on the plane. He's smoking the airport. Holy 80s.
Yeah, that's how you know this is definitely set in a specific place and time, because you can take guns onto airplanes. You can smoke indoors.
It was kind of amazing because I commented when we were watching this, and we all kind of agreed that this movie really dates itself in kind of a specific way, but not in a bad way. It's like sort of, it encapsulates like a certain time period where it's very obvious that
it's definitely doing it for effect, but also just because that's just the world they live in.
Yeah, that's just how it was. Like, this is stuff that we don't have anymore, but it's stuff that we were very young and we understand,
most of us were toddlers at the time.
But we don't have
Brad
anymore.
Was a wee zygote.
Right. Brad was like a twinkling in his father's eye.
I was alive.
Brad was jizz at the time.
That. Yeah, I was.
Well, I'm cutting that out. God,
that's such a gross like saying that I love it.
twinkling in my father's eye?
Yes. That's such a like gross like turn of phrase.
A skeetling in your father's balls.
Gross.
Thank you.
God damn it, John.
Keep that one in. Although I was a little bit older than that.
Yes, you were actually born at the time.
He gets the point being, this Die Hard came out in 1988, which is sort of, for us at least, it's sort of maybe the earliest moment where we kind of, where most of this podcast started creating memories. And sort of our image of what the 80s looked like.
Yeah, Joseph and I were probably about 2 years old or so, and John was about four.
One of the first memories I have of having like a movie that I watched a lot was I had a tape that had Die Hard and Big taped off of HBO.
Oh, wow.
What a combination, John.
Yeah.
See, for me, that tape was Return of the Jedi and Last Starfighter. Incidentally, Return of the Jedi was the first Star Wars thing I'd ever seen.
No, I had movies that had titties in them.
Could have done worse.
You came out better.
Die Hard did have some titties in it.
Yep.
That's for sure.
Two of them specifically.
More than two.
There were
two titties.
No, there were three different Playboy centerfolds in this movie.
I thought you were going to say there were three titties, and I was going to tell you that this is not Total Recall.
I thought we were talking about breasticles.
Go ahead and say titties. It's fun.
Titties. So he gets off the plane, and he's in fucking California, and there's a guy waiting for him with a sign that says his name on it. He's like,
it's Argyle!
It says Jay McClane, and he's like, oh, I'm John McClane.
And like a fucking like 12-year-old kid is waiting for him with a limo.
Mm-hmm.
Like his name's Argyle, but he looks like a goddamn 12-year-old, seriously.
He's the best.
Yes, he was amazing. And having like heard mention of Argyle before I'd seen this movie, like I'd heard him referenced, and I always assumed...
In Fallout 3?
Just in general, from people, cultural references. I'd always assumed that he was, like, some old dude, like, Alfred to Batman.
Yeah, no, he's...
Yes.
He's, like, he doesn't look old enough to, like, drive his dad's Plymouth, let alone drive a limo.
Most definitely not Alfred, but a fucking cool-ass dude.
This may be the alcohol talking, but if I have... I might name my firstborn son Argyle now. That's... baller ass name.
I hope you do. I love the Argyle pattern, so I mean that's pretty cool. Yeah.
But he didn't wear any Argyle.
He played some sweet ass Run DMC.
They have some male bonding. He plays Christmas in Hollis.
Yeah, I was gonna say the first fucking musical cue in the movie is Christmas in Hollis, which made me like really excited.
And the second musical cue is like maybe the most important like piece of music storytelling in the movie. It's like the second that John McClane and his wife see each other, like, the romance music kicks in, and it's literally the first like piece of orchestra you hear in the entire movie.
Yeah, but the whole like original orchestration is all like themes on Ode to Joy.
That's something that carries on, in at least in the John McTiernan Die Hards. In Die Hard with a Vengeance, it was the song that I know is When Johnny Comes Marching Home, which might have another name.
That's the name I know it by.
Yeah. That song is, like, carried out throughout the movie, like a leitmotif or something, I guess?
Yeah.
Leitmotif.
So he arrives in Nakatomi, and it's pretty much deserted because it's Christmas Eve. There's, like, two security guards there, and then everyone's on the 30th floor having a party. And he, you know, he starts looking. He's like, I'm looking for Holly McClain. Can't find it in the directory. Oh, it's Holly Gennaro. Wonderful.
Oh, and also, I was very excited about the directory being a touchscreen, which was something...
Yeah.
It was something extremely novel at the time. Which, I remember...
It might have actually existed, because this was Fox headquarters in the late 80s.
I remember the earliest, this in the early 90s.
Yeah, the earliest touchscreens I remember were probably, like, wedding registries at Belk and stores like that. Mm-hmm. And I just thought...
I remember bowling alleys.
Yeah, I thought that was just, like, the shit. So, it was kind of neat.
I actually think the first, like, touchscreens I ever saw were in Jurassic Park.
Oh, wow.
So
the Unix system, I know this.
Yeah, exactly. But no, that's a good point to make, is that, like, they actually filmed this at 20th Century Fox headquarters, which hadn't been completed, like, construction when they made the movie.
Yeah.
And they totally just wrote that into the movie, that the top, like, floors were not quite finished.
Yeah, it's like the 30th and 33rd floor are finished, and the 31st and 32nd are under construction.
Yeah, yeah.
And so the thing that I was wondering was, because they had a lot of really destructive action sequences in the building, did they actually do the interior scenes there, or were those, like, on sound stages?
They filmed that at Skywalker Ranch and just ruined George Lucas's house.
Maybe. I mean, I know in certain scenes where, you know, John and some of the terrorists are throwing each other into, like, steel beams and stuff, those steel beams come down so quickly and easily.
Yeah.
Those had to be props. So even if they did, like, film it on the 30th floor of the unfinished Fox building, they probably were very careful about it. I feel like those scenes were probably on a stage.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, it just seems like even if they didn't actually damage the building itself, it makes such a mess that... Yeah,
at the very least, the exterior shots were the Fox building.
Yeah, I can't imagine them actually filming that shit inside the building and then having to clean up all the broken glass.
I know for a fact that, like, all the backgrounds where you can see, like, the skyline of Los Angeles in the background, that is a matte painting.
Yeah.
So, like, those had to be on sound stages because
they couldn't just
put that up.
Yeah. I didn't know that.
Into the building. So those are definitely sound stages. And I know for a fact, like, that matte painting of Los Angeles, they still use that in movies.
Really?
It was so, like, advanced and fancy.
Speaking of still moving shit in movies.
Yes.
Like, McTiernan specifically, like, re-recorded all of, like, the gunshot sound effects for this movie because, like, the stock library that Fox had was from the 50s.
Ew. Oh, man.
Yeah.
Speaking of gunshots, you made me think of one specific scene is when they shot the second security guard, the one that was standing kind of in the hall by the elevators.
Yeah.
I mentioned this when we were watching it. I swear to God, I saw the blood shoot out of him like a split second before I actually heard the sound of the gunshot.
So,
which is kind of awesome.
That's like lightning and thunder.
Yes.
Let's get into the movie, maybe. I don't know.
Okay,
So John shows up at the party, and it's just a general, generic corporate drunken asshole Christmas party.
It's a Gennaro corporate.
Yeah.
Damn.
I see what you did there.
I'm sorry.
So, he's at the party, and, like, his wife, Lucy McClain, is going by...
Holly.
Lucy's his daughter.
Lucy's the daughter.
Yeah, so Holly McClain is going by Holly Gennaro now, and he's, like, goes up to the party, and the head of the corporation, or at least that branch, Joe Takagi, greets him. He's like, hey, John McClain, how you doing? What's up? And they take him, he's like, let's go to Holly's office. Holly is the director of corporate affairs.
Yes.
They go to their office, there's a dude doing coke on the desk.
Yeah, and it's...
Ellis.
It's Ellis. I mean, he high in the running for favorite character in the movie.
Have you seen Futurama? Remember the future stock? 80s guy? That's Ellis.
He, basically, when I saw him being his businessman self, it kind of made me think of
Paul Allen,
American Psycho.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he was like that kind of business dude where he does a lot of cocaine and is just like
he's halfway out of he's the one you're obviously supposed to hate.
Yeah,
right.
He's totally hitting on Holly, and when John arrives, he's like, you know, look at the watch we got. Yeah, it's a Rolex. It's pretty cool.
You know, let's start talking about the fucking card stock that our business cards are on and shit, you know?
Look at how well this company provides for your wife.
Yeah, so John and Holly get into it because he's like, you know, why the fuck are you going by Gennaro now? You're McClain, and
she's like, you know, oh, it's a Japanese company and you're not being supportive. And that's...
Her door said H.M. McLean or H.M. Gennaro on it, though. So was that Holly McLean Gennaro?
It might have been.
Or...
Probably, yeah. Yeah.
I was wondering about that.
Yeah, but she goes by Miss Gennaro now, yeah.
Yeah.
Instead of Mrs. McLean. So they get into it, and about that time, we see a van and a car drive up, and it's the best shot in the one of the best shots, because they, like...
The absolute best... My favorite shot in the movie is when this Pacific Courier van...
Yes. Yeah. Courier of Peace.
It's like a box truck. It's not even a van. It's like it's like a truck.
Like a day cab, almost. Like a...
It's a box truck.
Yeah. Okay. But it pulls into the Nakatomi parking garage, and a car pulls in like right in front, like cuts it off almost.
Yeah,
and they're driving parallel into the parking garage, and then all of a sudden the
van disappears.
The van just like drops down into the basement, and it just disappears from the frame.
Right as it drives into like the lower parking deck,
this ominous music plays, and you're like, "Oh shit, something's about to happen."
Yeah, and then two guys get out of the car. One dude looks like Fabio, which half the bad guys in the movie look like Fabio.
Yes.
And the other one is one of the few Americans in, like, the bad guy group, an African-American named Theo.
Yeah. Right.
They get out of the car, go in, they kill the security guard at the front desk, and Theo...
Bam!
Yeah, Theo starts hacking all the computers. Theo is the computer hacker in this movie, which, that's kind of a strange thing for the 80s, I think, the fact that the computer hacker nerd guy is not white.
It was definitely different for the time, yeah.
Yeah. It seemed like they were trying to do a lot of stuff like that, though, because Holly Gennaro was kind of like the sort of women's lib, like, you know, the really successful woman, like, high up in the corporation. Which,
shoulder pads.
Right, yes. Which was, like, kind of a, you know, a, sort of a an 80s trope, I think, like, sort of new then, with, you know, like, people trying to kind of be really progressive, so...
And at the time, it's yeah. I'm sure it was progressive because like
yeah.
There are three African American dudes in this movie, and they're all in different positions of power.
Yeah,
sort of.
There's no guy that's just like the stereotypical like muscle guy with dynamite or something like that. You see in an action movie,
right? All the thugs are like white German guys.
Though I could definitely see like by today's standards some like, you know, 17-year-old Tumblr right, watching this movie and going, oh, well, they're all subservient to white men, so really it's kind of regressive.
Yeah, exactly.
So, I mean, 1988, you sort of take what you can get, you know? I still like all of the African-American
Are you kidding? Argyle answers to no man.
No.
Argyle answers... Well, no,
yeah, Argyle answers to his fucking...
He answers to John McClane.
Technically speaking,
he answers to his
really,
fucking stuffed bear friend.
Because you know what? Argyle loves John McClane, and so does Al Powell. And I'm sure if Theo got to know John McClane, he would love him too.
So John and Holly go off in a side room. They start arguing, and Holly's sister's like, hey, you have to go give a speech to everyone because it's a Christmas party, and that's what you do.
And John's taking, like, a hobo bath in
the
bathroom.
Yeah, he's taking
a
hobo shower, yeah. He's like...
He's taking his shoes off.
He's doing, like, a fucking PTA.
And this is the 80s, so there's, like, a bottle of Evian in the bathroom and shit, you know.
Hey, man, it's the
80s. Yeah, so at that point, you know, Theo and the other Fabio, who is... I think it's Carl, is that?
It's Carl, yeah.
Theo and Vanessa.
Yeah, they shoot the security guard, and then Alan Rickman... And all of his friends come up, and they go up to 30th floor and start shooting up the place. Mm-hmm. They take everyone hostage and give a speech about how, you know, Nakatomi's horrible corporate influence on the world. They're going to get a lesson in real power. And
like, Hans Gruber holds court in this weird, like, sort of midnight mass kind of pose.
Yeah, a little black book, yeah.
White night.
Because it's Christmas Eve, so obviously
exactly.
We have to have some religious symbolism.
Right, and they do a really good job of cramming little sort of Christmas nods in throughout the entire movie.
Yes.
And that's just one of them.
The speech you're hearing at the beginning, it seems like he's, like, mad about their, like, corporate hegemony or whatever.
Yeah, he has a political agenda.
Yeah, and then they get into a room, and Theo has a computer, and he's like, log into this, and Hans Gruber is like, I don't give a shit about your corporation. I give a shit about the $160 million of...
No, it's $600 million.
$640 million of negotiable bearer bonds you have in your vault right now.
Yes. And which is important because...
Yeah, which this is an important thing to Die Hard in general, like the franchise, because Takagi is like, what kind of terrorist are you? And Hans Gruber is just like, who the fuck said we were terrorists? That, like, okay, so when Live Free or Die Hard came out, is that the fourth one or the fifth one?
That's the fourth one.
Fourth one. Bruce Willis, not John McClane, Bruce Willis did on Ain't It Cool News did a Q&A, and someone asked him what he thought was important about Die Hard. He thought the most important thing was... What starts out as, like, some, like, weird political terrorist action turns out to just be a fucking robbery. And that's all of the diehards.
That's true of at least three of them.
Is this like Ocean's 11 gone really wrong?
It kind of
that's
is.
That's kind of what I liked about this movie.
Is that why they wanted Frank Sinatra?
Maybe.
That's kind of what I liked about this movie is because you had an action movie where it's, you know, this underdog taking on, you know, all these people against the odds. But on the other hand, it's also a heist movie.
Yes.
Going on at the same time. And so, it's just one dude fucking up the heist movie.
That was John McTiernan's doing. The original script was some, like, super cop dude against terrorists. And John McTiernan was just like, let's make it an everyman and let's make it a robbery.
Yeah.
Right. And you can kind of see it, because if you swapped this, and if you looked at Ocean's 11, either version, and you played it out, John McClane would basically be playing a casino, like, security guard.
Right.
He would be Paul Blart, okay?
Yeah, and when you see Ocean's 11, you're fucking cheering for the robbers, because they're,
they're suave and debonair and really super cool.
Exactly. Although,
and Bernie Mac is with them, and come on, how do you hate Bernie Mac?
Yeah, although I was kind of like, oh my god, I love Alan Rickman when I was watching this.
Oh, because
he's kind of amazing. So he was pretty debonair himself.
So they shoot Takagi because he's not giving them any information, and Theo's just like, whatever, I'll just fucking hack it because I'm Theo.
Mm-hmm. And he was going to whether or not.
Yeah.
You know.
And so, yeah, so just to kind of set people in place, John McClane at this point was in another room when all the terrorists burst in and started rounding people up, so he ran off to another floor.
Right.
And he sees them shoot Takagi, and they hear him scrambling about, so they start looking for him. He ends up killing one of the terrorists by, like, throwing him down a flight of stairs.
Like, the terrorist intern that was main bad dude's
brother.
Main
like, brother.
Little brother.
The guy who was basically brought along because he knew how to, like, he was an electrician, and he, like, cut the phone wires at the beginning.
Yes, and they, like, fucking, like, grappled down a flight of stairs, and then the terrorist guy broke his neck.
So, something worth pointing out is these guys are all, most of them are, like, German in this movie. Their terrorist cover story is that they're an East or West German, like, socialist movement called Volksfrei, which is basically Red Army faction.
Right. It's, like, free people.
Yeah, which if you watch the German version, they're, like, basically the IRA who turns to
freelancing.
Who turned to freelancing for profit, yeah.
So the free folk, that's the fucking people from the Game of Thrones. Yeah, it's just the people north of the wall.
Oh, you know nothing, Karen.
These are the people west of the wall. What's the difference?
Damn it. Okay, so he kills him. He sends an elevator down with the corpse of the first terrorist on it. He writes on his shirt, "Now I have a machine gun." Ho ho ho.
Now
you know where that line comes from.
I was really excited about this because I have a friend who had gone to a Christmas party with a gray sweatshirt where he had written in red on it that phrase, and I knew that it was a reference to something, but I didn't know what.
So he went to a Christmas costume party as a dead body?
Yes. I guess so.
Merry Christmas.
And I was like, I know this is something good, but I don't know what it is
tonight. Just like the Star Wars holiday special, having now watched Die Hard, like, an entire world of references and in-jokes just opens up to you.
It has just made itself available to me.
Because Die Hard is definitely one of the more referenced and quoted and just all-around sort of ubiquitous action movies out there. Like, everybody's trying to do a Die Hard. Everybody's trying to live up to Die Hard, and
I think
being an action movie, it still manages to be really fucking funny. Exactly.
I think basically this entire episode is just going to be us filleting Die Hard because it's so good.
Gush fest.
Oh, Die Hard.
Thanks, John.
Basically,
you're welcome. So he, you know, kills a terrorist in the elevator. They know he's there. They know there's someone there now, fucking things up for them. He pulls a fire alarm to get someone's attention. You know, Huey Lewis is at the front desk.
Not Huey Lewis, but Huey Lewis, basically.
They have a couple Americans in their party. It's a pretty multicultural. Like, Hans Gruber is pretty progressive.
He's pretty progressive for late 80s, you know.
To be honest, happened was, they instead of just getting German guys, they decided who's a menacing-looking guy we can get. So they got, like, Vigo the Carpathian was with them.
And not even a joke. Like, it's literally the guy.
Yeah. But there's one Asian guy. There's a couple of American guys.
It's the Asian guy who you... If you've seen any 80s movie, you've seen him. He's like henchman number one.
He's Al Leong.
He's Bob Genghis Khan from Bill and Ted.
Yes.
But the main German guy, whose name was Carl, I kept calling Carl Hungus because he basically made me think of Peter Stormare from The Big Lebowski as the porn star.
He is the brother of the guy that John McClane first kills, and he is not too happy about that.
Oh, no.
Ooh.
How
that.
Every chance he gets, he's trying to find an excuse to like sneak off and go find and kill John McClane.
Yes. So John McClane pulls the fire alarm, and the fire department starts to come, and they go away, and then he calls on the radio and is like yells at the fire at emergency, like, why the fuck aren't you sending people out here? What the hell's wrong with you? They eventually send a single cop out, and it's Carl Winslow. No!
Before that, they were like not taking him seriously at all.
They were just like, this is an emergency line. Please hang up and dial 911.
Right, which is completely a departure from how it would be today, because that shit would be taken like seriously.
Okay, we're sending
a
Voltron.
Let's send the fucking National Guard in.
Like, even when I was a kid, like, you dial 911 by accident, they would send a cop to come and, look and make sure
fucking
you weren't...
Batman fucking... is showing up to lecture you.
Yes.
Swear to me you won't dial 911 again!
Those are valuable public resources! So, Carl Winslow, Al Powell is the character's name, shows up, snoops around, almost gets his head blown off.
Yeah, he goes around, and then Huey Lewis at the front desk is just like, oh, the fire alarm's been fucking up all night, whatever.
Oh, and, yeah, the guy at the front desk looks like Huey Lewis, by the way.
So he starts driving off, and then John McClane has killed a couple of the terrorists at this point. He throws one of the bodies out the fucking window onto Al Powell's car.
Just to let him know that there is something going on
in
that
party,
building.
Pal.
Yeah. And, you know, he crashes his car into a ravine almost.
He, backs it off of a weird embankment.
Into a big drainage ditch, yeah.
Yes.
And because of that, and because of his, insane screaming fit, the entire LAPD shows up.
And local news. Walter Peck is at the local news.
Walter Peck found a new job.
His boss is the principal from the Breakfast Club.
That's the head of the LAPD,
Principal Vernon. I had actually made, a couple Breakfast Club jokes previous to this without knowing this.
The only person missing from this movie in terms of, 80s movie assholes is, fucking Kurt Fuller.
Yeah.
Which, the only thing I can think of is he was too busy filming Ghostbusters 2 at the time.
Exactly, yeah. He was in Ghostbusters 2 because William Atherton was busy doing Die Hard.
Yeah.
But, the cops show up, and then the FBI shows up, and then basically everybody shows up.
Yeah, and then at this point, Hans Gruber's like, no shit, Sherlock, the FBI showed up. We need them here.
Right, this is part of his plan.
Right.
Yeah, and you get the idea, he's not told everyone his plan.
Yeah, he doesn't. He doesn't reveal his plan, really, until almost the very end of the movie.
Yeah, because at this
point,
he keeps it very close to the vest while letting things slip out that need to be slipped out.
Yeah, because not even Theo, who's in charge of breaking into the vault, knows what's going on. Theo was we cracked the password, it's Red Castle. He's like, now we gotta drill through all these physical locks and the electromagnetic lock. You can't shut that out from here.
Red Castle was only there were seven layers of security.
Yeah,
that was only the first layer.
Yeah, there was the lock has seven layers. One is a password which ended up being Red Castle. And then there was
which turned out to be the American translation of one of the carriers. Nakatomi.
It was one
of the carriers that the president was on in World
War
II.
Yeah, it was Akagi.
But also, it was, I think in the movie, it was shown to be one of the names, the translation of one of the Nakatomi executives' names.
Yes.
Which, also, have you guys read a lot of Shakespeare at all?
I thought it was the carrier, one of the executives.
Well, here's the thing, though.
Similar, same name.
Right.
Have you read a lot of Shakespeare?
Some.
So one thing in Hamlet is that there's a lot of weird in-jokes in Hamlet about the guy who plays the gravedigger in the last Poor Yorick scene. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the jokes are about the actor who originally played the gravedigger playing roles in Romeo and Juliet.
Okay.
The entire joke about Akagi is basically that the guy who played Takagi was in the Battle of Midway as a role of one of the major Japanese generals or something like that.
Huh.
It was just some weird, only if you have seen this other movie do you know what the fuck we're talking about joke.
Right.
And I think that's kind of what's going on. But anyway, the other locks are, they just drill through them with a big fucking movie drill.
Right.
It's like Johnny Five in Short Circuit 2, basically.
Theo puts some fucking, protective goggles on and just goes at it.
Just goes to town.
Yeah.
And then the last lock they say is electromagnetic. We can't shut it down from here.
But you know who can?
The FBI. Fucking I.
And so they do.
Yeah.
The FBI calls up, some rando from another Ghostbusters movie out of the sewer.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, I can shut off the power from here. Slip, snip, snip.
Yeah.
I ain't afraid of no ghosts.
Yeah, they shut off the power. And you realize that this was Hans Gruber's plan all along. John McClane kind of threw events out of order, but his entire plan all along was to... I was thinking maybe their plan originally was take all these people hostage, rob the vault, and leave before anyone knows what's going on,
Right. John McClane really showed up and, like, accelerated
the plan. Yeah, he didn't change the plan. He accelerated. Their plan all along was, we take the people hostage, call the police, go, help, there's hostages. You need to send the FBI. And the FBI cuts the power off for them so they can get in the vault.
Because the FBI has, like, an entire handbook of how to deal with terrorists. Because they're still operating on the logic that these guys are terrorists.
Yeah.
Right.
And so they actually called the FBI and like, yeah, free all these guys in the IRA, free these guys to Asian Dawn.
And the best detail is that, like, Hans Gruber is just reading off a list of people he's heard of.
Yeah.
Yes.
Not even people he knows and people he's associated with.
Yeah, Carl is with, like, who the fuck is Asian Dawn?
He's yes.
like, I read about him in Time, I don't know.
Yeah, there his cohorts are completely, like, baffled by all this, you know. He's like, just whatever, just
and,
go with it.
I mean, we will keep coming back to this idea many times, but I love that Die Hard is full of these little moments where it's clear everybody's pretty much making it up as they go.
Yeah.
Including Hans Gruber.
Yeah, because
you get the sense that the guys that he's asking to be let go could be really just anybody.
Yeah.
Right.
He just picked some names.
He's like, he's just picked, like, free Moomy, I don't care, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And so he starts doing the demands, they cut off the power, and we're kind of jumping around order here because honestly I'm too drunk to remember how the movie goes.
It's fine.
I'm sure everyone has seen Die Hard besides Brad and myself.
It's also episodic enough that certain events happen out of order and it's not really that important.
Yeah, so John McClane, he kills a couple terrorists here and there as he goes along, just kind of thins their numbers out. And he gets on the radio with Al and starts feeding Al. He doesn't tell Al who he is. He's just like, you know, call me Roy Rogers, whatever.
Yeah.
Because before this, Hans has called him a cowboy, which is where the yippee-ki-yay motherfucker line comes
and
in.
And I was so excited. I, like, squealed.
Yeah, that's
when
one
that
of those
happens.
Things where it's like, I know this is a line. I have no idea what the context
is.
Oh,
it's going to come
up.
Yeah.
Because I actually.
There is no context in Die Hard 2 through 11.
I actually mentioned it during the Reindeer Games episode, which we recorded on my birthday.
Yes. Happy birthday, Karen. You watched Reindeer Games.
I know. We got to watch the actual decent movie on your birthday, John.
We watched real Die Hard.
Yeah, but, you know, when he's
I'm
like,
special.
When he was like, pow, wow, you know, I was like, oh, is that this movie's yippee-ki-yay motherfucker? Even though I'd never seen Die Hard, that's just like such a fucking like cultural meme at this point.
And the thing about that line is like, it's sort of become overblown. And, like,
yeah.
It's sort of like in Star Trek 2 when Kirk screams, Kah!
Yeah, yeah.
Everyone thinks he like screams it and then like drags it out, but he just like, screams it and then echoes.
Yeah.
So in Die Hard, you're ready for this amazing like yippee-ki-yay motherfucker, and he just kind of
like,
shoot.
You know, he like
kinda,
ices the main villain or something like that.
And he just whispers it into a microphone.
Right.
This is like a general fuck you comment. Yeah.
Much like when he's like crawling around through the ducts and he's like, yeah, come on up to the coast. We'll get together, have some laughs. You know?
Yeah.
Please excuse my terrible impression.
I noticed that during this movie that a lot of the lines I remembered, the lines that are like worth quoting and worth repeating, are kind of just thrown away.
Yeah.
Just kind of like just sotto voce asides, like just muttering to himself.
Like the when
I was in junior high, dickhead.
Yes.
Yeah, like,
best line in the movie.
Or like when Hans Gruber is threatening Takagi. And he's like, I'm going to count to three. There will not be a four. They could have waited until John McClane, who's watching him from a distance while he says it. It's a great line, but you don't get to see him say it.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, speaking of something about the Nakatomi is one thing that John McTiernan in this movie is like the Nakatomi boardroom is full of all these crazy ass artifacts of just random stuff.
Yeah.
And like their main lobby literally has falling water in it. Like the from the Franklin White house. The waterfall from it it was just a comment on how much Japanese businesses were taking over in the 80s. It's just falling water is literally in this 30th floor of this office building.
But for the purposes of the movie, was that actually falling water or was that just a replica?
From the commentary, John McTiernan said that was supposed to literally be falling water.
Okay, right.
Yeah, because they had all kinds of like sculptures and
like
art pieces.
Frank Lloyd Wright bridges and stuff like that.
Yeah,
like
bridge. Yeah, I was gonna say the bridge that when I saw it, I was like, that bridge is a vagina, because that's what it looks like.
So where are we at?
FBI.
The FBI shows up and then he keeps killing terrorists. And
oh,
then the FBI are like, or before the FBI show up though,
they
the
load
LAPD
up the
is,
ceiling with C4.
No, the LAPD is like, oh, we'll send in some guys,
SWAT guys,
some SWAT guys on foot. And Alan Rickman is specifically like, shoot to wound, not shoot. He's like, don't kill them, just shoot them in the knees or the shoulder or something if they fall down, you know?
Oh, I didn't catch that.
No, they do. And then, so they send in an APC, but it has like normal tires, so what the fuck is the use?
Is it the same APC that they use in Aliens?
It might be, because later on they recycle, there was some music that they made for Aliens that they use in this movie. They didn't use in Aliens.
So maybe. And it was a Fox movie, so yeah. Like, maybe.
But they bring up an APC and they shoot it with a rocket launcher, and it's kind of weird because Hans is very specifically shoot to wound, and he's like, well, go ahead and shoot that with a rocket twice.
Yeah,
and then it shows like all of the people that were in it, like just fucking writhing around on the ground,
They're very much still alive, though, which I think is probably his plan. Because if you shoot a cop, the other cops are like, maybe we should negotiate. If you kill a cop, the other cops are like, hey,
fuck them,
bring in the nuclear weapons.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
Oh yeah, if they had killed any of those SWAT guys,
they would have just leveled the fucking building.
Yeah, they would have just brought the whole thing down.
Yeah, who gives a shit about the 30 plus hostages?
Which is what the FBI guys say later. They're like, you know, we could take out all the terrorists, lose like 25% of the hostages at the most.
I can live with that.
Yeah, I can live with that. And are Johnson and Johnson the best or the worst?
Yeah, pretty much.
Kinda, yeah, simultaneously best. Yes. And the worst.
Which. That, again, one of those cliches is like, you know, it's like when they arrive, Principal Vernon is like, you know, I'm Dwayne, was it Dwayne
Robinson?
Robinson, I'm in charge here. And they're just like, not anymore, you're not.
Is this a commentary on Johnson & Johnson, a family company?
I think so.
Also, did White Johnson kind of look like Tommy Lee Jones? A little bit?
A little bit.
Slightly.
One of the Johnsons was the villain in License to Kill, I know.
Yeah,
that.
One of them's Robert Davi. The other was Balrog in the Street Fighter movie.
Oh, God.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Jesus.
Small world after all.
See, these are how I know people. I know one by name and one from the Street Fighter movie.
I could see some Tommy Lee Jones there.
The FBI guys have decided they're going to bring in the helicopters and take out.
Yeah, first they shut off the power, which is like Hans Gruber's like, hey, they shut off the power. Guess electromagnetic locks doesn't work anymore. Hi, negotiable bearer bonds.
Which is exactly what Hans Gruber wanted in the first place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All he wanted was to get into the vault, take the money, and go.
His plan was to get the FBI there to negotiate so they would turn off the power.
Yes. And then he's also loaded the roof with C4.
Yes. Because the plan is basically, you know, what he says later on is if you steal $640 million in bearer bonds, people start looking for you. If you manage to blow yourself up on the rooftop of a building in the middle of L.A., people are just like, oh, he's dead.
Right, and they put C4 all over the roof. And the other important part is that he had herded all the hostages up there as well.
But, yeah, and then he had also made the police believe that they were going to be up there as well.
Yes.
They were going to do like a flight hijacking.
Something to note, though, is that before this happened, John McClane killed the guy who had the detonator to that.
Yes.
Which is why they were so desperate to find him. They wouldn't have given two shits about him other than him killing people if they had still had the detonators. They'd be like, fuck it, we'll blow the roof anyway.
Yeah, he was stalling their plan at that point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because he had the detonator and he had some C4, and that's how he stopped with a rocket launcher blowing up the APC, was he threw C4 down an elevator shaft.
And just made, like, this insane chain reaction explosion throughout the building, which is completely unrealistic.
But it's the best thing ever.
I was still so excited when I saw it. It was awesome.
The entire second floor of the building just goes kerblooey.
Yeah, it was
just
like...
the fireball goes all the way up the elevator shaft.
Yes!
And it's ridiculous, but you know what? It just works.
It's so good.
Principal Vernon's like, we got hundreds of people covered in glass, and he's like,
who gives a shit about glass?
Yes.
which is ironic, because later on, he has to walk across an entire
floor. Speaking of which, in Poland, this movie is called Glass Trap, because of all the scenes involving broken glass, which just means that in Poland, in Live Free or Die Hard, was called Glass Trap 4.
This sounds like some... Okay, I'm getting too political here, but this sounds like some fucked up shit, like Kristallnacht or something.
It has nothing to do with Ira Glass. So yeah, so they heard all the hostages up to the roof, and McClane's up there, and he shoots a couple of terrorists. Not a couple of hostages. That'd be weird.
John is like waving his machine gun in the air, firing it, and
like,
trying to get them back off the roof.
Right.
And Act two.
And the FBI guys see him and think, oh, that must be a terrorist.
So they try hard.
Yes. Yeah. Act
They start taking a couple shots at him, and then at that point he hears everyone off the roof, and he himself jumps off the roof tied to a fire hose.
And then the roof blows.
Alan Rickman blows up the roof.
Yeah.
And my favorite line in the movie happens then. Principal Vernon is like, I think we need more FBI guys.
I thought your favorite line was the Saigon thing.
That's my favorite one.
Oh, okay,
this is just like Saigon. And then Johnson goes, I was in junior high, dickhead.
Yeah, the white Johnson is like, this is just like, hey, Saigon. And he's like, at this point, he's putting on a backwards baseball cap.
Yeah, with a sniper
and
rifle.
And he's a sniper rifle. He's like, this is Saigon. You know, Johnson is just like, I was in junior high, dickhead.
Yeah, he falls down with a fire hose and shoots and, like, busts through a fucking window.
So what happens... we missed an important part here. The reason that Alan Rickman, Snape, Hans Gruber, finds out who John McClane is because, first off, he goes to the roof to start looking around to make sure that the guys who are now dead planted the explosives.
Yeah.
And he runs to John McClane. And this is a scene that wasn't originally in the script. This was written as they were
shooting it, yeah.
Because they found that Alan Rickman had a really good American accent. He goes up and he meets him. He's like, oh, no, you're one of them. You're one of the terrorists. I'm American.
Fakes that he's one of the hostages.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he, like, tells him, he, like, looks on a directory of names. He's like, oh, I'm Bill Clay.
Yes.
Well, I think the thing is that John was checking out the directory and questioning him, but
Hans was checking out, too.
Hans was just so on his shit that he, like, grabbed one. He's like, oh, I'm Bill McClay. And it was, like, William McClay or whatever. Yeah,
William Clay.
Yeah.
But, I mean...
He gives up the ruse way quicker than I thought he would. As soon as he gets a gun, he, like, points at McClane. But the gun's empty, though.
But, yeah, Bruce Willis, like, knew what was going on the whole time because he gave him an empty gun.
Yep.
Yeah.
Which I fucking called before he tried to shoot him.
He knew what was going on. It's just he knew not to trust him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
I was well, you dumbass, that gun's not gonna have any bullets in it.
The terrorist runs up and they fight in the computer room on the 33rd floor.
In the fucking server room.
With all this glass room. That's where
they shoot the glass out.
Glass trap. That's where glass trap occurs.
Remember the fist with your toes line comes up?
Yes.
McClane has no shoes on the entire movie.
Yes. Yes.
And he stepped on a bunch of broken glass to get across there.
So this is where Kristallnacht happens?
Yes. And he drops the detonators, they get him back, and that's when they start blowing up the roof.
And that scene, the scene where they shoot the glass and he has to run across it, it's sort of the end result of like what they've been setting up with John McClane this entire time is that he starts out the movie when the action starts, he starts out basically in an A shirt, no shoes,
yeah,
white shirt, no shoes, but
like
a
fucking wife beater, yeah,
right, like he crawls through the air ducts, and gets all dusty and brown.
Yeah, he gets, like, so nasty.
And then he runs across a bunch of broken glass and gets his feet all bloody and brown. And when he comes out at the end threatening Hans Gruber with a machine gun, he is almost not even himself anymore. He's just kind of lost it.
Which I thought he had lost it at the beginning of the movie when he was talking to himself, but he's really lost it.
That's just him.
Yeah, by the end.
So, yeah, they get the diners back, and Hans kind of reveals himself. And at this point... When at first Al has started calling out for backup on the radio saying, I'm getting shot the fuck up at Nakatomi Plaza, Walter Peck heard it on the radio. It was Richard Thornburg, the reporter for, like, the local news. He heard it. He gets a truck, goes down there, and that's when, like, all hell breaks loose with the police. And then the problem that John McClane runs into is Ellis realizes what's going on, that the person missing that's fucking up everything for all the hostages is John.
Is Holly's husband.
Is Holly's husband, yeah. So he goes up to Gruber after doing a bunch more coke. He's like, hey, Bubby, I can get this person.
He thinks he has a plan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they know he has a plan.
Which really, I honestly have to give him some credit for the way he tells John his plan is pretty fucking good. Because he gets John on the radio and he's like, John's like, what'd you tell him? He's like, well, I told him that you're my friend and you came to the party with me. Which is very much just like, this is the line I'm feeding you.
Right.
Agree with me, dipshit.
It was kind of good, considering that he was a fucking super coked up, like, business dude.
Considering at the start of the movie he was skeeving on Holly incredibly hard.
Yeah.
It was almost a change of heart for him
to
try and do something right.
It was almost heroic.
A little bit. And then, like, one of the jokes that doesn't quite land, I had to...
They pour him a Coca-Cola, probably because he asked for some Coke.
Yeah, they bring him a Coke, and they pour it, and he just kind of looks at it like, oh.
They poured, like, they gave him, like, a fucking, bigger than a highball glass, and poured, like, not even a third of it.
The idea behind it is that he probably asked them for some Coke, misunderstood him, because they brought him a Coca-Cola.
So, I lived in Europe for a while, for about a little over a year.
Let's just go ahead and say you lived in Germany.
I lived in Germany, yes. I lived in Germany. And sometimes when you go to restaurants, you can order 200 milliliters of a soft drink. To give you an idea of how much that is, 500 milliliters is 16 ounces, just about.
They're more restrictive than New York now.
Just, yeah.
Well, wow. that soft drink ban in New York is still in effect, right?
But the,
probably.
Think, but the thing is, though, you realize that I can get 200 milliliters of Coke for like €3, or I can get a beer for a penny. What the fuck?
Yeah, last time I was in Munich, I believe a liter of beer was less than €3.
Yeah, there was a bar in the town I lived in that specifically their entire gimmick was, we'll give you a bottle of beer for €1.
Yeah.
It's kind of amazing.
So Ellis is like, I know John. I'll get him to come down. And John is just like, I don't fucking know you, asshole. I met you tonight. And so Hans responds by shooting Ellis in the head. That seems to be Hans' solution to a lot of problems involving hostages.
Because at that point, John is denying that he knows Ellis. Like, who is it that denies Jesus?
Thomas.
Yes. Doubting Jonas.
Doubting Jonas?
I don't know.
It's Thomas. He wants to see the wounds. He wants to see the stigmata and the fucking,
He wants to see that dead motherfucker, Ellis.
Yeah, exactly.
So Carl specifically corners John McClane to get into a fist fight with him. Carl's out for blood by his own hands. Not even a gun is good enough. He wants to punch this dude to death.
Right, because he killed his younger brother by grappling down the stairs.
So, yeah, they end up fighting, and John McClane ends up strangling him with a chain. And then he leaves
him hanging high and dry, too.
Yeah, he looks dead as fuck.
Yeah, and there's a couple of, even it cuts back to a couple times of shots of Carl just fucking hanging there, dead as hell. He runs down to the 30th floor and finds, at this point, because of Richard Thornburg fucking around on the radio, on the news, Hans has figured out that John McClane and Holly Gennaro are married. So he takes Holly hostage to the vault on the 30th floor.
Yes, and everyone else is free at this point, I believe.
Everyone else has just run the hell off because John has killed all terrorists except three, which are four. Hans, Theo, Eddie, and the other guy with them that just gets pistol whipped.
Right.
The only two people who live are the guy who gets pistol. John just basically hits this guy with the butt of the rifle.
And then Theo gets.
Argyle figures out what's going on. He sees them take an ambulance in the back of the van. How is an ambulance in the back of the van?
Yeah, Argyle's
it's
like
movie magic.
Yeah. John McTiernan has been
Argyle's a sharp motherfucker. Yeah.
But
he's
been getting drunk on the minibar and listening to Stevie Wonder the whole movie.
With a bear, yeah.
And then he hears with a big stuffed bear who's life size.
He sees this ambulance drive out of the back of the van, which that was their escape plan, was to have everyone herd into this ambulance and drive off in an ambulance while Theo's just like a paramedic. He rams the ambulance with his car and punches
Theo in the chest.
The
flat lines him by just tapping.
Yeah,
him.
So
yeah, I was gonna say the best part is he just kind of barely whiffs him through the window, and Theo's
he's shaking his hand ow, that fucking hurt.
Yeah,
and our girl thinks he's done some really cool shit.
Yes,
but yeah,
John McClane.
That was another thing McTiernan said on the commentary. He's like, yeah, we put an ambulance in the van. We had no idea how it would work. We just did it. Sure. So then he pistols one guy, and the only people left are Eddie, who is Huey Lewis, and Hans. And Hans has a gun to Holly's head. And at this point, John only has two bullets left for his pistol, and that's it. So he goes up with a machine gun, and Hans, put the machine gun down. He puts it down, and Hans is like, what'd you say to me? Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker. And they start laughing, and then
You see the camera behind John.
John McClane has taped a gun to his back.
And these very slow, ominous sleigh bells start playing.
Yes.
So he pulls the gun off his back.
Sleigh bells, indeed.
Cowboy shoots Eddie in the head and shoots Hans in the chest. Hans falls out the window. Not before grabbing Holly's wrist with the Rolex that Ellis gave her. So John, unclasps the Rolex, and Hans falls to the fucking ground.
And it's amazing!
And it's another,
really well shot.
It's another fucking amazing Principal Vernon Lang. He's like, I hope that's not a hostage.
So the movie starts with Ellis skeeving on Holly.
Yes.
And it ends with John throwing Ellis his gift off the roof.
Basically.
Yes, because then, we cut down to the bottom, and then John and Al finally meet for the first time, and then suddenly out of the wreckage of just something or other, who appears?
It's Carl.
It's Carl.
Carl then, on duty.
Yeah, no, it's Carl with a K, not Carl.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, not Al.
No. Let's point out before this, John asked Al, why he,
was working a desk.
Yeah, he's working a desk job, and he's like, oh, I shot a kid,
And, confused. So Carl's, or no, Al is not a beat cop anymore.
Yeah, he's on a desk. He hasn't pulled his gun in years. And Carl appears out of wreckage with his gun.
So apparently he's not dead after all.
Iced him. With
five in the chest, yeah.
Yeah, three shots.
Yeah, that fucking grouping was ridic.
And
So far, the movie hasn't really made John McClane out to seem like the big hero of the movie. He just does his thing and wins. Al gets the hero shot of the movie. Yeah.
He really does. It's kind of amazing. And the fucking, like, camera shot of it, like, you see the gun and, like, nothing like, else is in
and
focus.
He, like, lowers
the
camera's
coming up over and it, like, slowly, like, the focus slowly so changes good. And you see Al back there. It is amazing.
Yep.
That's the word for this movie.
Argyle bursts the hell out of the parking garage. He just rams his limo through the grate.
And everyone's ready to shoot him because they think he's another one of the terrorists.
Yeah, and then he drives off and Frank Sinatra starts playing because,
He drives off with John and Holly.
Yeah, at this point, Holly's like, you know, oh, I'm not Holly Gennaro, I'm Holly McClane.
Right. And they decide to just get in the back of Argyle's car and drive away. Because apparently that's what you're able to do at a fucking crime scene.
Oh, yeah.
And scene. In addition to being a great Christmas movie, it is one of the best bromances ever told on film.
Oh, yeah. John McClane and Al. So, fuck yeah.
Okay, so Crankometer, then. It's the best movie we've watched so far, I think.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Hands down.
How much of a Christmas movie is it?
By fucking far.
It definitely is.
I'm going to make the argument that it has to be a Christmas movie. For very specific reasons.
Now I have a machine gun. Ho ho ho.
No. So we watched some movies where, like, Reindeer Games, it had to be Christmas movie for the plot, you know. Batman Returns could have taken place on fucking Arbor Day for all anyone cares.
Right.
This for plot elements had to be a Christmas movie.
Reindeer Games was trying to be diehard.
I kind of
want to
play Devil's Advocate. Outline for me why Christmas.
Okay, so when are you going to end up with a time where you have in an office building? All the people left are two security guards who are only thinking about how much they fucking want to go home, and a bunch of drunken idiots on the 30th floor.
Okay, drunken, maybe not.
The only time I can think of is
when they're all working overtime because of something, but they wouldn't be drunken in that case.
Yeah, but
or at the Christmas party.
Yeah, you're hitting in a time in like, especially in the 80s, where nobody really gives a shit about terrorism yet, where there are people who are confined to one space. And there are a couple of security guards who don't give a shit where you can get away with taking over this place and nobody notices for hours.
They don't.
It works best as a Christmas movie.
Yeah,
yes.
You could probably retool the script, but not as well. Certain elements required to be a Christmas movie because when else are you going to have this set of like ground rules to play
right
by?
This like perfect like set of circumstances
right and the fact that nobody really wants to be there except the villains, like nobody wants to be on the job tending to
not the cops, not the FBI, not anybody.
Everyone is so willing to just dismiss it and go home because it's Christmas.
Right. True.
And then add to the fact that like basically Hans Gruber's theme song is Ode to Joy. It's a Beethoven piece, which is traditionally sort of kind of a Christmas piece, and they put it in throughout the entire film.
Yeah, it's sort of part of the instrumental theme that they have going through the entire thing.
And they sort of score it with different, you know, Christmas songs like Let It Snow and Winter Wonderland and things like
Christmas
that.
And Hollis.
Christmas and Hollis.
They didn't score anything with Christmas and Hollis. That was all Run DMC and Argyle.
Well, they scored when they got Christmas and Hollis.
That was a fucking score. I was excited.
The point is, like, those songs make this movie... They give the movie sort of a special feeling because it without those songs, the villain's plan doesn't seem majestic at all. Like,
yeah.
It's
not a Christmas miracle.
It doesn't have as much gravity.
Yeah, they definitely play when the vault opens up as a Christmas miracle.
Yeah, yes.
Totally.
Hans
do.
Totally said he tells Theo, it's like, you asked for a Christmas miracle? FBI. There you go.
And then Ode to Joy plays.
Yep.
Yeah, like, it definitely... relies on Christmas to kind of give it its oomph.
You know, the things like the little Santa Claus is in the background, and the fact that the Nakatomi building is sort of lined with company logos that look like Christmas wreaths.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's not really that important.
I thought those were supposed to be samurai helmets.
Well,
they are samurai helmets, but the way they're like interlocked and like up and down design, it looks like a wreath around the front of the building.
And let me again reference, you know, now I have a machine gun, ho ho ho. That entire thing is because Bruce Willis saw
because McClane knows it's Christmas.
He saw a fucking plastic Santa Claus and he's like,
right,
let's do this. And then I guess
fun.
Wrote on the guy's shirt with his blood or something, I don't know. And
so you can make the argument that it's not a Christmas movie because it doesn't It doesn't like speak to the true address like the holiday or speak to the true meaning of Christmas.
But this movie would have a hard time existing outside of Christmas in its current state.
Fair but enough. Die Hard is also at its core a movie about the family unit coming back together.
Yes.
John and Holly coming together and going home to be with their kids at Christmas. Like that's the main like terrorist plot is sort of the thing that's keeping them apart.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it has nothing to do like it's not a Christmas movie in far as Christmas as like a religious institution. No,
in my mind, Christmas is about family.
It's a Christmas movie as like a cultural thing, which as a non-religious person, I celebrate Christmas because it's a fucking family holiday, you know?
It's about as much of a Christmas movie as I'd say Gremlins is, which again, you could argue that it doesn't need to be at Christmas as evidenced by like Gremlins 2.
Yeah, I mean, it could have been at, what's the main character's name?
Billy.
It could have been at Billy's birthday and had the same effect, kind of.
Yeah. Yeah, and so it doesn't need to be, but the fact that it is just heightens it and makes it more special.
Yeah.
Please stop.
Brad started it.
That worked so well.
So yeah, so...
Crankometer.
Yeah, crankometer.
Christmas yes, good yes.
Oh my god, I love good, this more than
good
anything
yes
we've watched.
To the extreme, Christmas yes moderately, I would say.
It tops off the crankometer.
It tops off the crankometer by fucking far. Yes.
Okay, so new question. Die Hard or Crank 2?
I've never seen Crank 2, but
don't
fucking...
Don't toy with my heart like that.
But Die Hard, Christ.
Let's see, Crank 2 has Jason Statham's ball sack in it.
Really?
I'm guessing it's a prosthetic, but...
Oh, that's so tough. Oh my god. Don't,
like a ball sack is tough?
Don't toy with me like this.
I'm gonna go with Die Hard.
I'm still gonna go with Die Hard.
I've never seen Crank 2, but...
Let me tell you something. What? Nobody dies harder than John McClane.
That's true.
What about Gaston?
Nope.
He did die pretty hard, though.
Died like Gruber. He fell off a fucking roof.
Nobody.
I guess he did. Didn't he?
Perfect. Nobody dies like Gaston.
Gaston. Man, Crank 2's fantastic.
It's up there still.
So final thoughts about Die Hard.
It's good.
I fucking loved it.
It was fan-frickin-tastic. And even if I watched this movie and didn't make it for this recording, I would not have regretted a single second of watching Die Hard.
I was so excited to watch this for this recording. Like, I was beside myself and trying really hard not to watch it before we did this. I'm glad I waited.
Can I rehash some old ground here?
Okay.
This is something I mentioned on our previous Never RIPD. It is a theory to do with Die Hard.
Okay.
So, we have in Die Hard, one of the terrorists that survives is...
Theo.
Theo survives, yeah. And who else is in the movie? Reginald Val Johnson plays Al Powell.
Yes.
Yeah.
This is a theory my friend Rob told me, which has to do with, he calls it the Greater Winslowverse theory. You've heard the Tommy Westfall hypothesis, right?
Yes.
What's that?
It's the St. Elsewhere, the autistic kid.
Yeah, that all of TV is housed inside the snow globe in...
Or like in, a good 80%.
In this child's mind.
The series finale of St. Elsewhere heavily hints that St. Elsewhere is inside this autistic kid's head.
Right, and that...
Because of crossovers with Homicide, which crosses over
Law and Order.
Crosses over with so many things.
So the theory is that we have at the end of Die Hard, Al Powell is just like, this shit's tough. I can't live in LA anymore. And he moves to, moves to Chicago, changes his whole life, family name, everything, changes it to Winslow. But then what happens? Theo, you know, Theo doesn't die. He gets just knocked the fuck out by Argyle. He gets out of jail eventually because he didn't kill anyone. Carl killed the guy at the beginning. Theo didn't kill anyone.
That's true.
He gets out of jail and he's like, I really want revenge on someone. He's like, I'm going to get revenge on Al Powell. He moves to Chicago, changes his name to Theo Urkel, and he's like, hey, Steve, my son, go annoy our neighbors.
Is that Steve Urkel's dad's real name?
I really hope it is.
I don't think his parents ever have names.
You never see his parents. Steve Urkel's parents are never home, which is like, that's why they're always like, Steve, go home, and he's like, my parents aren't home.
I really thought you were going to go
Winslow!
I really thought you were going to go Cosby Show with this, which is why I was just so confused.
Have some cheese!
No, you got that wrong. You got that backwards.
No, dude. No,
that sounded like that sounded like Mr. Hankey. No, Mr. Hankey.
There's the one where he like programs a fighting game, and Urkel's Shoryuken is cheese, and he goes, "Have some cheese."
But his thing was always like, "Do you have any cheese?"
Yeah, I know.
So that was Die Hard, ladies and gentlemen. If you haven't seen Die Hard, what are you doing with your lives?
Watch Die Hard.
Drink everything you have.
Yes.
Like we have tonight.
Sit down and watch Die Hard.
Yes.
And then skip 2 and go straight to 3.
Yes. 2 is by Rennie Harlan, which means you can kind of skip it.
Yeah, I mean, for what it is, Die Hard 2, we can talk about that another time. Because Die Hard 2 is actually a Christmas movie, again. Less related to Christmas than the first, but still, hey, it's fair game.
Die Hard 2 focuses more on going through the Die Hard numbers than it is of being its own movie.
Right.
After seeing the first Die Hard, I'm really excited for
Die Hard,
Die Hard 3,
and the fact that I live in Germany. Something to note is that, especially in the original release of this movie, the German is so bad. Like, it's just what some people call like a blind idiot translation.
Yes.
Where all you do is you just translate the words in order and don't give a shit about grammar or anything like that.
Yeah, Jonathan actually has a degree in German, so he knows a little bit about it.
Which, in some subsequent releases of Die Hard, they went back and fixed most of the German except for Alan Rickman. But it's funny in Die Hard 3, because you'll see the subtitles pop up, which John McTiernan didn't like subtitles. In the Die Hard commentary, he specifically said he wanted to make a movie with no subtitles where you just understood everything just from context. I don't know if he ever actually did that or not. But in Die Hard 3, like, the subtitles would match up with the gist of what people were saying, but it was never actually what they were saying. Hmm. Like, the scene in the stadium where the one guy's like, you know, the guy's literally actually saying in German, yes or no. But the subtitles are saying, should I take the shot? Because he's talking, because he has a gun, he's talking about, should I shoot Samuel L. Jackson?
Yeah, Odor 9.
Yeah, that's what he says. That's what he's saying. But the subtitles are just like, yes, the subtitles are like, should I shoot?
This was episode 10, and it was sort of a high for us.
Maybe a low for you.
No,
it was a high in that we were all fucking high on booze.
Don't get spoiled by Brad being here every episode.
No.
He lives a decent enough amount away where he can't be with us every week.
He lives in Die Hard 4 land.
And we live in Fate. Dawson's Creek land?
Yeah.
Fate has convened. I live in Die Hard 2 land. What are you talking about?
And 4.
Oh. Fuck if I know these things. Anyways. Fate convened for me to appear on another episode of Christmas Creeps.
And we were
thankfully
so glad to have
we were super excited to have Brad.
But we are way over our time limit here, so we need to wrap this thing up. That was episode 10 of Christmas Creeps. We talked about Die Hard, as you can clearly tell. Episode 11 is probably going to be on the downturn, so come on back, and we will be torturing ourselves again with probably something really terrible, because this much good karma cannot go unpunished. So we do definitely have a master list of potential episodes for the future. If you have something you would like us to cover sooner rather than later, email us at xmascreeps@gmail.com. Find us on Twitter, @xmas_creeps. Find us on Facebook. We're
Christmas Creeps.
We're easy to find on Facebook.
We're the skull of the candy cane crossbones.
Yes. And please, 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 go to iTunes, leave us a star rating, leave us a review, and let the people that use iTunes know what to expect when they download Christmas.
Yeah.
Rate, and subscribe.
What to expect when they're expecting.
Leave a shitty review, leave a good review, leave a mediocre review. We don't give a fuck.
The more reviews that show up, the quicker we will get some kind of average rating going.
Leave a review, no matter what it is.
Tell your friends, tell your mom, tell your dad, tell your pastor, tell your doctor about this show.
Tell your therapist.
Your doctor's going to probably suggest that you not listen to this show.
To these four assholes talk about Die Hard.
Seriously, like, if you love us, let us know. If you hate us, let us know. Just let us know. How's my driving?
If you love us, let us go. But don't come back next week and listen to these three fools talk about
just don't hold on us movies too hard, because we'll slip through your fingers.
If you love us, hey ladies.
If you hate us, we're Penn and Teller.
That's gonna do it for this week, and this is was and forever shall be Die Hard.
Good night.
Good night, everybody.
We're gonna die hard. We're gonna die as hard as we can.
because.